Okay, it's Purim Tavshin Ayin Aleph. Our subject today is the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, returning something that is lost, okay? Now, in the story of Purim, you will find constant references, constant repetition of the word lahashiv, some form of the word aveda, la'abed, avadati, avadati, and the word that is often used in reference to these two words, which is bikesh, bakosha. Levakesh is to seek something. But it's a particular kind of seeking, like Yosef, who comes from Rachel, as does Mordechai and Esther, because the children of Rachel are those that are always responsible for the ongoing existence and survival of Klal Yisrael. And as Yosef said to the man that met him in his feet in the field way back when he was looking for his brothers, right, what did he say? It's Achai, for my brothers, ani mevakesh. I am seeking. Seeking means I'm looking for something that I lost, that I once had. Levakesh is like we are called mevakshe Hashem. Seekers are people who are constantly looking for something they lost. That's what Yosef says. And that's what is happening here. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always seeking Klal Yisrael. Even if Klal Yisrael don't know how to find their way back, we are guaranteed that Hashem is seeking us. In the Megillah, there are other people that are seeking. Hashem is seeking Klal Yisrael. We'll speak about why. Haman is seeking Bikesh, La'abed. He's seeking to lose Klal Yisrael, to force them to be eternally lost. But Esther has a bakasha too. She's also seeking something, and that's the opposite of what Haman's seeking, and that is for the survival of Klal Yisrael and the restoration of Klal Yisrael. Now, who's seeking wins? Obviously, we know. But if you go through the Megillah, you will see the constant reference to the word bakasha. Everything here in pink is some form of the word bikesh. Page after page after page, is pink is bikesh. Yellow is hashiv, some type of the word lahashiv, to return. And I have yellow all over the place. And if I was David, I'd have it all up on a David Foreman up on a screen with highlights. And then we have the blue, which is the, I'm sorry, we have another color here. We have the purple, which is la'abe. It's all over the Megillah. When you look at the Megillah before Purim, or as you see the go through the reading, look for these three words, bikesh, ibud, or la'abed, and lahashiv, to return. Now, when we start talking about Hashem is engaged in the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, this mitzvah really becomes relevant for the first time here in the Purim story in relation to Klal Yisrael. The mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda shows up in Devarim, in Parshas Ki Tetze, and the halacha there is that if you see something or you find something that is lost, it's in Perek Chaf Beis, Psukim Aleph through Dalid, you have to return it. Hashev Tashiv, you shall return it. And the pasuk there specifically says, if you see somebody's seh, a sheep that's lost, you must go and return it. The Gemara asks, why does it have to mention a sheep? It's everything that's lost. And the Marsha answers, because it's a reference to Klal Yisrael, who are compared to a lost sheep sometimes. And we are ensured that Hashem will surely, surely return Klal Yisrael, find Klal Yisrael, when they are straying. In Perek Kuf Yud Tes of Tehillim, that long Perek in Tehillim, there's four psukim for every letter, right? So the last pasuk in the entire Kuf Yud Tes says, David HaMelech says, Ta'iti Keseh Oved, I strayed like a sheep, lost. That's Klal Yisrael, that's an individual too, right? But Bakesh Avdecha, you were always seeking me. You were seeking me. You would not let me just wander off and be lost entirely. I was assured. We are assured that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always going to seek us. However, why are we sure that Hashem is going to seek us? Because we're holding on by a thread. Ki mitzvasecha lo shachachti. I have not forgotten the mitzvahs and what I once was and the way I used to live. This is the theme of the Purim story, one of the under, you know, the themes in under the surface. And the Radak says here, not only does this refer to a person, Klal Yisrael, but the essence is that when the Seh is lost and straying, when the sheep, which is a reference to Klal Yisrael, is straying, that means individually and on a nation, on a national level, what we mean is, Ki nafshi lo yada adayin l'shuv el yisoda. My soul doesn't know how to go back to its roots, to its core identity. We're not going to go back to the whole story, which we have been speaking about, of right the perfect state of man, which is when a person knows their root and what they're rooted to and who they are, and the dangers of losing that and searching in a million different places for who we are and what role we play. You know all about that with the Eitz Hadas, right? Right? If you don't, go listen to last week's and the weeks before, but it's deeply, deeply rooted in the whole story of Kodem, what the status before the sin and the status of the sin. But this comes up, you'll see it now in the Purim story, where a person is seeking their roots. Why have Klal Yisrael lost? What have we lost? This is really our big question. What have we lost? Why is Hashem seeking us? Where have we gone? The question we're really asking is, why did they go to the party? So that we have to go behind that. Right, because Gemara says they were guilty because they went to the party. Then they ask on that, they question that thinking in the Gemara, and they say, but only the people of Shushan went to the party. So how do you threaten everybody? So they answer, because everybody way before this bowed down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. They said, but they didn't really do it. They just did it externally. So they answer, that's right. And Hashem never really intended to annihilate Klal Yisrael through Haman. It was just external to teach them the lesson. So what did we lose by going, bowing down to the part, to the statue, going to the party? We were lost. How does this work? First, we have to know that the party was a celebration of the fact that Achashverosh at that time felt secure, as the Megillah says, he was finally enthroned, although this was the third year of his Malchus. He felt that he was securely, for the first time, seated on his throne, because he was sure that the 70 years of the Gullus predicted by Yirmiyahu had come and gone, and the Jews had not been saved. And so this party was a celebration of the fact that the Jewish people were no longer relevant. This was a celebration of the fact that they would never be returned to Eretz Yisrael. They would never reestablish their kingdom, which superseded all other kingdoms in the world in its glory and its importance and in the role the Jewish people played, which kept every other monarch and empire in a lower state. Now he was sure Klal Yisrael will never be returned, and he was celebrating the fact that now the nations of the world, him in particular, ruling the whole world, were free to dominate the way they wanted to without the conscience and the pressure and the threat and the overwhelming force of the Jewish people looming above them.
Esther, what was the miscalculation?
The miscalculation goes like this. This is how it works. Now, this party that Achashverosh threw is very similar. It's almost striking. As we said, when you live in a world of subjectivity, you are blind. Well, before him, not that many years before him, maybe just a few, 7-8 years before him, Belshazzar, the last king of the Babylonian Empire before the Persian and the Medians took over, threw the exact same party because he also did the calculations and he also decided that 70 years had come and gone and he also made a mistake and he also, the night of his celebration, was doomed and his whole empire was overtaken. And Achashverosh went ahead and recalculated and came up with Belshazzar's mistake and made the same party. And both of them, to celebrate their sense of relief that Israel and everything it stood for had been utterly destroyed, never to be restored, they both took out the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash and put on the big day kahuna. And to that degree, you know, that can happen. That kavod is not transferred from us to them that easily. So what's the calculation mistake? The Yirmiyahu says it'll be 70 years from something to do with the destruction of Yerushalayim through Bavel, 70 years of Bavel, So without going into all the details, but this is in Maseches Megillah, it's in Daf Yud Aleph. There were three major kings of Bavel. They were Nebuchadnezzar, Evel-Merodach, and Belshazzar. Nebuchadnezzar came into power in the year 3319. Bavel was founded. That in 3320, a year later, they sacked Ashur. Okay, and in 3319, I'm sorry, they deposed Ashur. That's Assyria, the ones that had exiled the 10 tribes. And it was the next year after they overtook Ashur that they assumed dominion over Eretz Yisrael. That was in 3320, the year after the beginning of the Babylonian Empire. That year, they conquered Eretz Yisrael in the time of Jehoiakim. That's when Belshazzar started counting from. However, it wasn't until 8 years after Bavel was actually founded, which is when Belshazzar counted from the foundation of Bavel when it became an empire. 8 years later, in 3327, there was Gullus Jehoiachin, 8 years after Bavel. That's when Achashverosh started counting from. He said, Belshazzar made a mistake. It's not from the foundation of Bavel, it's from Gullus Jehoiachin, but it wasn't from that either. It was 11 years later, which is why the Purim story takes basically 12 years to play out, and then 2 more years for the return after Esther. But he also miscalculated. It was really 11 or 12 years later by the Chorban in the time of Tzidkiyahu. And there's a lot of half years and whole years that come in here, how the calculations work. However, he was sure that it was from Gullus Jehoiachin. And it wasn't, it was from Gullus Tzidkiyahu. So it was in the third year of his reign that he calculated like this. He calculated the years of Nebuchadnezzar, Evel-Merodach, and Belshazzar. Then when Belshazzar made the party, under the assumption that based on the foundation of the Empire of Bavel, the years were completed, that's when Darius the Mede, Daryavish, the original Daryavish, not Esther's child, the first Daryavish, took the throne, that were Persia, and Koresh from Madai, okay, they were called Paras and Madai at the time, Daryavesh and Koresh, they took the throne, followed by Achashverosh, and Achashverosh recalculated, said it's 8 years later, which ended up in the third year of his reign, and that's why he made the party then. Now, he makes a party that celebrates the demise, the lack of relevance, the loss of Klal Yisrael in terms of their role in the world. Now, why would Klal Yisrael have, you know, in any way, buy into such a philosophy? Because the Gemara says that the reason they were punished was not that they went to the party because perhaps they were forced to go to the party. The reason they were punished, and this is on Daf Yud Beis, is they derived pleasure, shenenu misudas shel oso rasha, because they enjoyed it. How could they possibly go there and enjoy the party when it was a celebration of their own death as a nation, as a people? The only way to explain that they could have enjoyed the party was by the fact that they began to believe that perhaps he's right. Because look, 70 years according to Belshazzar's calculations, had passed. Nothing happened. Okay. Then Daryavesh and Koresh, who really ruled for 5 years together, took the throne, and Koresh, the anointed one, the one that had been predicted early, hundreds of years earlier, to arise, to allow them to go back to Eretz Yisrael, decides at that point that they can return to Eretz Yisrael. So the hopes look high. As soon as Koresh sends them back to Eretz Yisrael and people start returning and start building the Beis HaMikdash, it doesn't go so easily. The people in Eretz Yisrael, who had been placed there by the Melech Ashur, who had mixed up all different nations and transferred everybody from here to there, some of them were very unhappy with the return of the Jews to Eretz Yisrael. And at the same time, Achashverosh and Haman's children were generals and ministers in different provinces were in Eretz Yisrael, and they were tremendous anti-Semites. And the time when they saw the Jewish people coming back, they sent a letter, and they started lobbying against the Jewish people, and Koresh himself slowed down the building of the Beis HaMikdash and didn't let the Jews cross the Euphrates anymore, and it became a bit more complicated. Things weren't going well. It was fraught with difficulty every step of the way. nothing was working for them. And then when Ahasuerus took the throne, and Ahasuerus before that was a very powerful general, he already was deeply rooted in his hatred for the Jewish people. And Ezra tells us in Perek Dalet that when the Jewish people started coming back to Israel, the adversaries of Yehuda and Binyamin heard the people of the exile were building the temple for the Lord in Israel. They came to the Zerubbabel, and they said, you know, let us help you out. And Zerubbabel says, no, we're doing this ourselves. We shall build it as King Cyrus, the king of Persia, has allowed us. And the people of the land were hindering the people of Yehuda, frightening them from building. And they hired advisors against them, lobbyists, right, to frustrate their plan in the days of Koresh, the king of Persia, and in the days of Daryavesh, before Ahasuerus. And in the reign of Ahasuerus, this is in Ezra, in the beginning of his reign, Kasfu Sitna, they wrote a letter of accusation against the Jews in Israel, against the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, the threat that if they build their city, if they build their temple, they will become as they once were, arrogant, they will rebel against you, forget about not paying your taxes, they will never defer to another nation, you have to stop the building, cut it short, and that's exactly what Ahasuerus did. And that's why he kept saying to Esther, up to half of my malchus, but don't even think about asking me to let them build Yerushalayim, right, in the beginning. So Ahasuerus now stopped the building, decided that 70 years had passed and nothing had happened, and celebrated the party. The Jewish people, seeing all this, seeing this animosity against them, they thought 70 years would end. They would return to Israel, build the Beis HaMikdash, and once the prophecy came true, well, how would the nations of the world be able to stop them, interfere with them? And yet that was happening. Everything was going from bad to worse. There was no sign of Geula. There was no sign of them succeeding at building the Beis HaMikdash. And they began, for the first time, because it's the first time the Jewish people were ever in such a predicament, to lose hope with themselves. They began to be mityaish, to despair. Now, the halacha in Hashavas Aveda is this. We started out by saying we're talking about the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, returning something that's lost. As long as the owner of the object has hope for the object to be restored to him or her, it is always considered belonging to the owner, and they have never been mityaish. They have not experienced yeyush, total despair, and disconnect from the object, and they're always in the category of being the owner of that object. So if you find something, and you know that because of the circumstances of the situation, in that, A, what you find has a simen, it clearly belongs to someone, it's not like a dollar bill, and B, it's not on a street where everybody's passing by and, you know, nobody knows whose dollar bill it is. So instantly, the person that drops a dollar bill is going to be misyaish and give up hope and disconnect from it. But if you find something like someone's necklace or a coat that's identifiable, and it's in a shul or it's in a house or it's in a wedding hall, you know that the owner, for both of those reasons, is not giving up hope that they're going to find it. So here, this is a case where, as David HaMelech says, we are like a set, toa, like a sheep. As the Pasuk says, if somebody loses their sheep, and that's a reference to Klal Yisrael in Tehillim, in Kuf Yotes, David HaMelech says, we're like a sheep that wandered off. Now, Klal Yisrael are beginning to stray. From who? From themselves, from their role, from their sense of connection to their role, to their identity. Perhaps Hashem has had it with us. And the Gemara in Shabbos says that Klal Yisrael truly assumed that they are now like a servant who has been sold into slavery by his master, or like a wife who has been divorced from her husband. That was their assumption. The Geula is not coming. 7 years have passed. They're not letting us rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Hashem has disconnected from us. That was Klal Yisrael's assumption. That was the real sin of Klal Yisrael. That's why they went to the party, because very often it happens that people sin not from a feeling of arrogance and confidence and importance, but rather more oftenly from losing hope, from being disheartened that they have any important role to play anyway. What do they matter anyway? They might as well just give up. They might as well do whatever they want to, because nobody's counting on them and nobody expects anything from them, and they don't have to rise up to a level because they're not that important, and they don't hold, you know, the keys in their hand to any great, you know, a purpose or tachlis, and that's why people sin. And it was a collective yiyush, disheartenment, hopelessness that set in for Klal Yisrael. However, at the same time, there were those among Klal Yisrael that went to the party, and when they saw the goings-on, and we have other words for parties like this, and the Gemara explains that it was degenerate in the most degenerate way, as you can imagine. And they were so disgusted by this type of behavior that although perhaps they considered the fact that Hashem had rejected them, within them was still an attachment to the basic standards of that Klal Yisrael lived by, and they became repulsed by the party. So there was something still there. What has to happen is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to help Klal Yisrael find within them their real identity, that who they are, and reconnect to it. And then after that, Klal Yisrael will know what they have to do, will strengthen their attachment to the Torah and the mitzvahs, which was slacking off terribly, and recognize their identity and keep themselves separate from the nations they live amongst, and still in return to the emuna that Hashem will, the Geula will come. It's just a matter of time. The calculations are off, and they'll hold on until that time. So here, that's why Klal Yisrael go to the party. It's a collective experience of yiyush, of losing faith, and yet there's still some degree of hopefulness. Now, in the words of the Megillah, just to start to read these, to see these themes built in here, okay? And you shall keep this in mind when you hear the Megillah, okay? First of all, Esther was definitely seeking to save Klal Yisrael, okay? But Esther is selfless, and she is not seeking anything for herself throughout the entire story, just in case people would want to, read, to try to reinterpret what's happening here. First of all, we are told in Perek Beis that when it's her turn to go to Achashverosh, lo biksha davar, she didn't want anything. She was not interested in becoming the queen here, the wife of Achmanadinejad, right? And she didn't ask for anything for herself, but there were those who were seeking for themselves, and it wasn't just Haman, others were seeking, everyone is seeking. The question is what you're really seeking. And first it talks about the big son and Seresh, big tan v'teresh. V'yavakshu l'shloach yad b'melech Achashverosh. They were seeking to kill Achashverosh. V'yavukash ha-davar, and the thing was seeked out. They, in other words, they investigated it. Next perek, this is where everything really pulls together, perek gimel. V'yavakesh Haman lahashmid eskol ha-yehudim. Haman was seeking to destroy Shmad, all Klal Yisrael. But the word Shmad, you know what it means. What he really was seeking is Shmad. Shmad means a total disattachment of Klal Yisrael from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, the fact that it was Haman that came up here as our arch enemy, that fact that it was Haman who was desperately seeking total disattachment of Klal Yisrael from Hashem, in a way is comforting. Because the pattern that we have well established is, as we learn way back in the first time Amalek attacks us, the Pasuk says, Vayisu mirafidim. They traveled from Rafidim, Vayavo Amalek, and Amalek came. Rashi says right there, we don't need to know that they traveled from Rafidim, because we just heard in the last Pasuk that they were camping in Rafidim. So obviously that's where they were traveling. Rashi says there, Rifyon Yadayim min HaMitzvos. As soon as the Jewish people start slacking off their hands, by the way, hands, Yadayim, Yaday Esav, remember, that's a whole nother thing. As soon as they slack off, lose a grip on the mitzvahs, which comes from being disheartened, not remembering the importance of their role, not feeling their worth as B'ni B'chori Yisrael, light unto the nation, so they slack off from the mitzvahs, that's when Amalek comes. Amalek is there to remind us, to scare us, to threaten us, to wake us up, that we have to find ourselves. So here is Vayivakesh Haman, that's what Haman is always seeking. Lahashmid, total disattachment. So here's what he says to Achashverosh. Vayomer Haman lamelech Achashverosh. And this is like an oxymoron built in. And Esther is putting into the Megillah, in the words of Haman, exactly the indictment against Klal Yisrael. What is going wrong and what needs to be done. So here's what Haman says. Yeshno am echad. The Gemara explains word, almost word by word this whole Megillas Esther, like we do in Torah itself, because it's Torah, right? We said that in the end of days, just Megillas Esther and Chamishei Chumshei Torah and nothing else. And so Haman says, Yeshno, Gemara says, don't read it, Yeshno. Yoshein. They are in a state of, like, you know, they're unconscious. What are they unconscious about? Yeshno Am Echad. That they are Am Echad Ba'aretz. They are the one nation. The nation that is connected to Echad. The nation that is said about them, Yisrael Va'orais of Kudsho Brichu Chadu, Yisrael and the Torah and Hashem are one. The nation that is one in mind and heart. The nation that knows exactly who they are and who they're rooted to. And Mordechai, the Gemara says, was Hayehudi, and he always went around pronouncing, speaking about Achdus Hashem, Echad, the oneness and Klal Yisrael's role that will never be changed as attached to and part of an expression of the will of Hashem. So Haman says, Yeshno Am Echad, that they, this nation which is Echad is unconscious to that own their own identity. So what's happening? What are the next words? They are Mifuzar and Mifurad. They are scattered and they are divided from each other. Not just technically, all over the kingdom. But think about it. If a person is not rooted in their core identity, as Radak says, that the Seh is Toa, the sheep is wandering and doesn't know how to get back to its source, to its core identity, to its Yechidus, its one true essence, right? So they become scattered. They search in a million different avenues for an identity, for a purpose. Every nation develops for itself an ethnic identity, a cultural identity that makes them unique. And Klal Yisrael, losing hope in their true uniqueness and importance, are thinking like it says in Yirmiyahu, and let's be like all the nations. Every nation has an identity. We'll have our own ethnic identity. We played an important role once upon a time. We brought very important things to the world. We have a great culture. Some other identity. They're mifuzar. They're scattered. They're looking for their, you know, who they are in the wrong, all the wrong places. And, of course, they're mifurad. They are divided from each other. And this takes place on an individual level and a national level when a person is seeking outside themselves for other things that define them and give them their sense of identity. Then it's each man for himself. Everybody is divided from each other. But if you have more, I have less. It becomes a competition, right? Everybody is looking for external things, other answers to the question of who they are. And if someone else seems to have the answer that's their answer, someone competes with them, has more than them, threatens their sense of importance, it's each person is divided against each other. So the lack of echad in a person is instantly the lack of achdus as a nation. So that's what Haman says. They are mifuzar, they're scattered. In and of themselves, they're scattered, and they're separated from each other. And they says, therefore, if it's good in the eyes of the king, yikasev, you shall write, Le'avdom, to totally have them be entirely and eternally lost. They started to stray. They started to scatter. They're all divided. They're not connected. Let them just stray until they're completely lost. And, by the way, Chazal, the Gemara says that Achashverosh, way before Haman, intended to have the Jews be entirely lost to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that to ensure they would never be returned again and restored again as a nation. And that's why at the party he didn't coerce anybody to drink and therefore to sin, because then they would be able to excuse themselves and say, we were drunk, we were coerced, what do you want from us? So it was everybody, as the Megillah says, ein ones, nobody was forced to drink, so that if they would sin, they would sin by their own choice and their own interest, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu would let them, once they started to stray, entirely stray and never, you know, bring them back. That was the plan. So Haman's plan was always la'abed, to let them become an aveda, totally and completely lost. And this word comes up again and again. Perek Dalid, he measures out all this money to the king's treasury, right? Le'abdom, to have them totally lost. Now, Mordechai tells Esther to go to Achashverosh, right? Ulischanin lo, to plead with him. Ulevakesh milfanav al ama, and to seek for the existence of her nation. And by the way, every time it says HaMelech, you know it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? And here, when Mordechai is talking to Esther, he told her, Lavo el HaMelech, you have to go to HaMelech Hashem. Lehischanein, to beseech for Midas Chain, to find grace in Hashem's eyes. Ulavakesh, and to seek before him your nation. Just like the children of Rachel, always seeking the restoration of their nation. And when she hesitates, what does he tell her? At ubesa vichtovedu. Guess who's going to be lost? You and your father's house, and you know that goes right back to Shaul, who had a chance to kill Agog and didn't, and Esther's given a second chance to finish the job. And if she doesn't take care of this, Klal Yisrael will never be lost, is what he's telling her, right? But you will be lost. And then she says the famous words when she decides to go before Achashverosh, Kasher Avadati, Avadati. If I personally am lost in for the cause of Klal Yisrael, I accept that. I will personally lose my ability to return to Mordechai, my self maintaining up until this point separation from Achashverosh. Now she goes to him willingly. If she is lost physically, he kills her. Spiritually, lost to Mordechai, she takes the risk to seek to restore Klal Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When she goes to Achashverosh, what does he ask her? Ma bakashaseh, what are you seeking? We know what Haman is seeking. He's seeking that they should be in Aveda, totally lost. And they should have so much yish, right? Despair and hopelessness. They never would, you know, will find, not, they will not be able to be found again, so to speak. But Esther is also seeking something. And she's seeking to return Hashavas Aveda, return Klal Yisrael to their identity, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he keeps asking her, Ma Bakashasech. And she plays with this, and she finally says to him, "I will tell you what I want." She says that her bakasha. She says my bakasha, ma bakasha sechi, asks her, and she says, "Im na matasichein be'einecha hamelech, im al hamelech tov." She's speaking also to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just Achashverosh. If it's right and good in the eyes of Hashem. Tinasin li nafshi b'she'elasi, give me my soul, va'ami b'bakashasi, what I'm seeking is my nation. Give me my nation. Return them. And Haman then, you know, this happens at the party. Haman then gets up, tries to plead on behalf of himself to Esther when Achashverosh is stewing in the courtyard, right, in the orchards and the gardens, where this whole thing started back then and there. And he comes and he falls on Esther's bed because he is standing there trying to levake. She's trying to now beg to be saved, but that begging ends nowhere. He's not going to get what he's seeking. Now, this is imperik ches and tests, which sometimes we don't pay so much attention to because the big drama part of the story is over. But this is where Esther and Mordechai pull it all together and explain it all to us. Esther says to Achashverosh, really to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yikosev, you should write Lahashiv, to return all these books, these proclamations, Haman's ideas, where he wrote to utterly destroy, to you know, disconnect them, La'abed Asayuhudin. Right? You should decree to return all of these, kind of this attempt of Haman to that these letters that went out expressing Haman's deepest desire, our enemy's deepest desire, to have us be lost. And what does Achashverosh answer? A sefer that went out that is written and signed with the seal of the king, Ein Lahashiv, you can't bring it back. Now, what does that mean? You can't return it. It's out there. It can't be returned. Now, what does that mean? That means two things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu already determined, Im yiyeh nidachacha, if your people that have strayed, who have been pushed away, are in the corners of the heavens, Misham akabetzcha, from there I am going to bring them back in, no matter how far Klai Yisrael straight away. Either because we are Ovdim, right? We talk about the future. Vayom Hahu, and will be in that day. Yitaka b'shofar gadol, a great shofar will blow, like Yom Kippur, right? Uba'u ha'ovdim, those that are lost, will come from Eretz Ashur. V'hanidachim, and those that are pushed away, mi'eretz Mitzrayim. What is the difference between ovdim, those that are lost, and those that are pushed away? Ovdim are people that that slowly, because of Ashur, Ashur represents this type of galus. Everything is easy, everything is good. You know, it's hard to stay connected, to stay connected to our message and our mission and our roots, because the temptations are so great to kind of just degenerate into society. Those are ovdim. That's sometimes one of the ways we get lost. But there's another way we get lost, which is when we are pushed away, nidachim, and that comes from Mitzrayim, which means Mitzar, when there's a lot of tsaris and a lot of gullus and a lot of pain and a lot of, you know, incomprehensible suffering for Klal Yisrael, and that pushes people away. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu already promised in our Sefer that he wrote, okay, that no matter what reason Klal Yisrael stray from their core, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from the Eitz HaChayim, so to speak, he will bring them back. And once HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote that in a Sefer, you can't undo that. You can't rewrite that and pretend it was never written. That's also a Sefer that's Ein Lahashav. You can't return and undo. So, and at the same time, we're taught that the enmity of our worst enemy, Amalek, as a nation, and the force in us, which we spoke about, which wants us to disconnect from who we are, from our roots, from the Eitz HaChayim, right, and just become, you know, like everybody else, self-centered completely. That also is out there, by the way. That also exists, will always be the looming threat in the distance. And that also will never, until the end of days, be retracted. That's the dynamic of existence. There'll always be the Amalek inside and outside, because it is only through the challenges presented by these forces that we overcome, that we really assure for ourselves, we really gain for ourselves real victory and real freely chosen attachment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So they're both out there. Their will to destroy us and Hashem's will that we will never be destroyed. Those forces are always in existence and always competing with each other. But who is obviously is going to win, that we know. Now, what is the secret to the turnaround? To gather all the Jews and fast and pray. Now, it's fundamental to understand how quickly this whole thing turned around. The story took 9 years, but everything turned on a dime in one instant. It was the third year of Ahasuerus that he decided his kingdom was secure and he sat on his throne, you know, confident, and he made the party. That's when Vashti had herself killed for, you know all the stories. Right? Now, it wasn't even her fault. She was a pawn. She was Nebuchadnezzar's granddaughter, by the way, Belshazzar's daughter. She was as bad as all of them. She was in cahoots with all the Haman's children, the governors in Israel who were writing letters to stop the Beis HaMikdash. She was as bad as everybody. She gets killed in the third year. It took 4 years to find Esther. She became queen in the seventh year of Ahasuerus' rule. She sat in the palace for 5 years wondering what on earth she was doing there. Nobody had a clue. Nothing happened yet. Okay. During those 5 years, Haman rose to greatness to the point that, you know, he was given this authority, this great, you know, he was sitting on the most important chair other than Ahasuerus, and everybody had to bow down to him. And Mordechai absolutely refused, because Mordechai knew who he was, and he knew who Amalek was, and he never lost sight of the Echad. He was a Yehudi, he was called a Yehudi, that was his identity, and that was it. 5 years, the 12th year of Ahasuerus' rule, when it's about almost time, according to the real calculations, for 70 years to be over. Because as we said, Ahasuerus thought Belshazzar made a mistake, he was 8 years too early. But Ahasuerus made a bigger mistake, he was really 12 years too early, because it went from when Tzidkiyahu was exiled and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So we sat around waiting, Esther, for 5 years, and now, in the 12th year of Ahasuerus' rule, when it's about time, almost, for the Gaulus to be over, Haman the Amaleki comes to power and really decides to threaten Klal Yisrael. because they are languishing. The mitzvahs are slacking off. As we said, they're disheartened, etc. And Hashem sends Haman because Haman is always, Amalek is always the sign that Hashem will not let us be lost. So that's their job. That's what Amalek does for us. So he sends Amalek. Now, it's the 12th year. It was in Rosh Chodesh Nisan. How fortuitous is that? When Hashem said to Klal Yisrael, HaChodesh Hazel Lachem, you are Klal Yisrael. You will always be renewed like the moon. You will never, you know, you will have dark days and bright days. Don't worry about the dark days. Don't lose hope. Rosh Chodesh Nisan, he decides that's it. He's killing out the entire Jewish people. On the 13th of Nisan, okay, he has those letters written, and they're out there. They go out into Shushan, total annihilation of the Jews. That same day, this whole thing happens. Mordechai puts on sackcloth, and he goes in front of the palace, and Esther says, what's going on? And he tells her, and she says, go to the king, and she says, I can't, you have to, or you'll be lost. And she says, okay, let everybody fast. Now, Haman's letters came out on the 13th. He threw the lottery on, secretly, nobody knew, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. His letters came out on the 13th of Nisan. 4 days later, he was dead, swinging from the gallows, because Esther said, fast for me. 3 days. They fasted on Yudalid, Erev Yontiv, Tesvav, the first day of Yontiv, and they kept 2 days Yontiv, the second day of Yontiv. Okay? It was on the first day of Yontiv, counting from the day, the 13th, the day they started the fast, the day the letters went out, that she goes to Achashverosh, and she asks him to come to the party. That night, between the first day of Yontiv and the second day of Yontiv in Chutz La'aretz, that's when he couldn't sleep. That's when Haman builds the gallows. That's when everything turns around. That's the morning that he comes to Achashverosh, and he says, he was about to say, let's hang Mordechai, and Achashverosh says, go take Mordechai around the city on a horse, you know. Everything turns that morning. That day, the third day, right, the third day, counting, if the first day they started to fast is the end of the 13th, so the 14th, 15th, 16th, by the end of the second day of Yontiv is the second party, and that's when she accuses him, and he's hung. That's it. Now, it happened so fast. Now, it took a few months until Mordechai and Esther wrote the whole story out and sent it out. The Jews can defend themselves, etc. But here is the story. What we're really saying is, Klal Yisrael are slipping. They've been in Gullis 70 years, different versions of 70 years, okay? 70 years, they've really been there longer. 70, many have been longer than 70, because 70 from the Chorban. And they don't know who they are anymore. And this whole plan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, takes years to put everything in place. And then here comes Amalek, here comes Haman. Klal Yisrael, as Chazal tell us, open for me the opening of a needle, and I'll open for you the opening, right? Pischuli Pesach Shel Machad, and I'll open for you openings as huge as the greatest, you know, entranceways in the world. Klal Yisrael regroup. They start to fast. What is the concept of fasting? Together, and here's the other word that's consistently repeated, Vayikahel, they gather together. Hakelus, all the Jews. They all had to get constantly a reiteration on Achdus and Echad. Who are we? Hashem has not abandoned us. Find ourselves in relationship to each other, right? 2 few days of fasting, and they did eat a little bit, Gemara says, before dusk to restore themselves. They didn't fast straight for 3 days. They ate a bit in between, but who are we? We still have a role. Hashem has not abandoned us. We all are in this together. It's an organic whole called Knesset Yisrael. Each needs each other. A couple days of fasting, Esther goes to Achashverosh, and the whole story turns around. Haman, in a sense, all his plans and all his efforts and everything up till this point hits the brick wall of Jewish oneness and unity, and everything crumbles around him, and taking him down with it right away, instantly. So all that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking for from Klal Yisrael is an awakening. Once Klal Yisrael are awakened, then everything will fall back into place naturally. Now, we say that what was the ultimate joy? How was the joy expressed? Laihudim haisa ora, v'simcha, v'sasan, v'yikar. Or, let's talk about or. Laihudim haisa ora. The Jewish people had light. So that light that the Jewish people had, that's the light, you know, that's the Or HaGanos, that's the hidden light. That's the light that filled the house when Moshe was born. Remember what Haman said? He's going to do it in Adar, because Moshe died. But what does the Gemara say? Yeah, but he was also born. Now, Moshe had Karnei Or radiating from his face, right? Where do those Karnei Or come from? Anybody has a Chumash in front of them? Where do those Karnei Or come from? Karnei Or, Perek Lamed Gimel, Perek Lamed Dalet in Devarim. I'm sorry, Mishmos. In Kisisa, Perek Lamed Dalet, Pasuk Lamed. Right? Who has a Chumash here? Oh, it is a Chumash class. 514, Lamed Dalet 34:30 in Kisisa. Says he comes down and Klal Yisrael could not look at him. He karen or upon him. His face was glowing with beams of light. Rashi says, the most unusual Rashi, where did the light come from? So everybody thinks it must have come.
Yeah, let me take this for a second.
Thank you. Where does the light come from? Where does the light come from? Anybody see the Rashi? Where does Rashi, what does Rashi say? Where am I? Lamed, Dalet, Lamed. Hold it. Okay, right. So, Vayar Aaron v'chol b'nei Yisrael, and Aaron and all of Israel saw as Moshe, v'hine koran or pan of his skin was shining. Rashi says, from where?
The ink that he didn't use from the Vayikra, he took the ink and put it on. That's what gave the kind of
minute, no?
In English it says he gave him a glimpse of his glory.
So it says in Rashi, Chavtes, for Abbasenu Amru, our rabbis taught, where was it from? Mehechan Zocha Moshe Lekarnei Hahod. Where was he Zocha? From what was he? Did he merit these rays of light and glory? Rabbasenu Amru Min Hama'ara, from the cave. Which cave? Go back a parak to Lamed Gimel. In the cave, 33, Pasuk 22. When Hashem said, Hine Mokom Iti V'nitzavta Al Hator, when Moshe asked Hashem to know his ways, remember, and Hashem says, I'll put you in a cleft of the rock, before he revealed him the 13 Midas Rachamim, he says, V'haya ba'avor kavodi, when my kavod passes over you, I'll put you in this cleft, V'sakosi kapai alecha, I will put my hand, so to speak, over you. Rabbosenu Amru min ha'ma'ara, from the cave. Shanasana Kadosh Baruch Hu Yado al Panav Hashem, put his hand, so to speak, on Moshe's face. As it says, Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Chafes, Vesakosi Kapi, I will put my hand on you. In other words, the Karnei Or came from... Wait, careful. Because Moshe couldn't see Hashem, because Hashem covered him. Because Hashem didn't let Moshe see. So how could Moshe then radiate, you know, beams of light? The secret here is Esther min HaTorah minayin. Where is the hint to Esther min HaTorah? Haster aster panai. Hashem covers our eyes from seeing Him. That's what happened. So then, how do we find Hashem if our eyes are covered? We have to find it from inside ourselves. We have to find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, not because it's clear and obvious and we can clearly see Him like open miracles, but because it's hidden, and we have to dig deeply into ourselves and remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu exists in here and our connection to Him is never changing. And Moshe's light on his face came from within, from the aura that he brought out from within himself when he couldn't see anything outside of him. The Karnei Or came from the fact that he couldn't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Huttner says, if there's a person in a black room and you say to another person, go identify that person, but you don't give them a flashlight, what are their only options? They have to figure it out from hints and secrets. And then they develop a skill to identify people based on, you know, their contours, their features, the differences, they become very, very sensitive to seeing, so to speak, in the dark. That's exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to Klal Yisrael by so-called hiding, not bringing them back right away after the 70 years, not making the calculation so clear, by stopping and starting the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. He hid his face, in a sense. Klal Yisrael had to go and seek and find and remember who they are on their own, not because God did it for them. And that strength that they gained, and how long did it take? 2 days, 3 days. They found who they were. They reconnected. Kimu v'kiblu. They reaccepted the Torah. And then the Yeshua was enormous. The salvation was enormous. They became the most revered people in the entire huge kingdom. Everybody started to become Jewish. They were a minority. Even though they were allowed to defend themselves, why would that stop the majority of the people from attacking them anyway? The people, if they still would have attacked Klal Yisrael, would have had a very good chance to succeed. But nobody even attacked anymore. Everybody was afraid of Klal Yisrael. Everybody was in awe of Klal Yisrael. Mordechai was even more powerful than Haman. Esther was the queen. She was a Jew. The whole thing switched in an instant, literally in an instant. And the whole world began to recognize the role of Klal Yisrael because they recognized it themselves. It took them a moment to change. And then everybody recognized it. Everybody saw it. So this Or, Lehudim Haisa'ora, where did the Or come from? They found it in themselves. And we won't talk about the other two words, Sason, Lehudim Haisa'ora, V'simcha V'sason, but the last word, Vayikar. What does Yikar mean? But what does Yikar really mean? Just pshat. Worthiness, value, who we are, what our value is. Because Haman said, they're not worth anything. They're not worth anything. The king has no reason to keep them around. They have no value. Klal Yisrael reaffirmed their value, their role, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed them who they really were. And greatness came to Klal Yisrael, and they went back, and this is the beginning of Daryavesh. Esther's either biological or ideological child, lets them go back, and then they rebuild the second base of Mikdash. This all happened back then. Never again after the Purim story did Klal Yisrael ever make the mistake as a nation that because of the Gullus and because we don't see Hashem's hand and because the Gullus is not going so well and because it's fraught with danger and it's fraught with frustration, that means we're no longer Hashem's people. We never made a mistake again. Not even in our return, fighting all the wars and all the terrorist attacks, nobody thinks that any of that means that Hashem doesn't want us anymore. That was established by Purim, and it's all part of the Hester Panim that Klal Yisrael utilized to find and reaffirm and redefine who we are, to stay attached to it. And when Klal Yisrael are attached to it, then the world and everybody, all our opposers, all our opposition, it crumbles before us. It's Klal Yisrael's attachment to who we are, to our Shoresh, to our core, and that turns everything, makes everything right. So that's why today's Tanit Esther. By the way, we don't fast on the days they fast, which is Yudala Tesvav Tezayin of Nisan. We fast on the days Klal Yisrael fought their enemies. It is very important to fast on Tanit Esther, even though it's a nidcha and it's not you could break it if you don't feel well and all that. But fasting on Tanit Esther means that we identify with this most fundamental message, that if we find ourselves individually or as a nation, then everything falls back in order. Everything finds its source. Everything finds its core. And the Megillah, last idea, is called Divrei Emes B'Shalom. Because once a person knows who they are and what their message is and what their role is, they are B'Shalom. They are in a state of peace with themselves, with everything around them, and they are rooted to Emes. And that combination of knowing that you're doing what's right and you're attached to truth, something greater than yourself, gives you individually, as a people, a peace of mind, a sense of shalom, shleimus, and whatever difficulties come your way, it does not disturb the sense of emes and the sense of shleimus. So everyone should have a wonderful Purim and enjoy this.
Very interesting. I was staying with my daughter. Yeah. And we're studying Shmuel.
Yeah.
Shmuel and Esther. The subject of marriage. What do you tell them to do right before they went to war? Fast. Even though Yonah.